shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
No person except a natural-born citizen or a citizen of the United States.
It won't be for everyone, but I...
The lead investigators currently on this case are the Texas Rangers.
Are you gay?
Yes. World famous Phil Hendry show here every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast. A news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Truth is our bitch on this bitch. Every night, man. Through the looking glass we go and beyond as we try to give to you a look at, you know, places other talk shows can't take you. On the program tonight, we're going to be talking to Kurt Queedy and Guy Barton about parenting and very, very interesting story having to do with a father and a little girl and, well, what it was basically, an 11-year-old girl who had done something with the cement someplace, I don't know what, and has been fined by the courts, and the dad refused to pay the fine. Kurt Queedy and Guy Barton from the West Virginia State House in Charleston, West Virginia, going to be joining us. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL. Ted Williams, the man with the golden voice, reunites with his mother and a UFC fighter, gets a visit from the Secret Service after saying he wants to fight the president. Plus, we'll reveal the 10 most hated companies in America. Emery Clayton joins us as well. And our affiliate spotlight tonight on WQRT 1160 AM in Cincinnati and WGUF 98.9 FM in Fort Myers and our website, philhendryshow.com. Here is the story from Middlesex, New Jersey. And I know, Guy, you've talked about Guy Barton and Kurt Queedy. How are you guys doing?
Very good, Phil.
Phil, I'm fine. I'm having a difficult time hearing you. We have just adjourned this session, but we did introduce our State House bill on giving parents lessons. And when I say parents lessons...
Let me read this. Kelly Zeit, a New Jersey sixth grader, is heading to court after her parents refused to pay a fine after she etched her name in wet cement. Now, she's 11 years of age.
Yes, that's true.
That's about the story?
Well, our bill is not about that story, no.
It's a similar thing, though, Phil, that they have brought to it, you know.
All right, so there's been similar events where children run afoul of the law and the parents are not being responsible?
There they are. That is exactly what our bill is about. When a child or any minor is involved in some transgression, we have to have the parent back us up. And I say us, I mean the system, whether it's law enforcement or the court system, we have to have the parent back us up. And if we don't, we have no choice than to appoint a tutor, and that would be someone who administers some level of punishment and holds that child responsible.
Yeah, but having someone go into the home... It sounds very invasive. I mean, you're going to have, you know you're going to have problems, Guy.
I don't think so, Bill. I think what we're asking is that the parents need help. They are losing the fight, the discipline of children, I think is the way that Kurt said it.
Yeah, it is still almost a battle that they're losing because the parents these days and parents when I was growing up have more and more responsibilities, you know, and so as that goes on, certainly I think they need the help of a state tutor, and this would be an adjunct of the Department of Education in West Virginia and other states.
Yeah. And so, Phil, if I could jump in.
Go ahead.
This child had etched her name in cement. She had run afoul of the law, and the father said, I got to pay the fine. That's the more than pay a fine. You have to have someone discipline that child because they're not doing it.
Well, what is a state tutor going to do when they're talking about a tutor, T-U-T-O-R?
That's correct, yes.
Yeah.
What are they going to do? All right, let me just ask this. Police caught an 11-year-old girl and her friends writing their names in wet cement. The sixth grader told Channel 9 News, and I think we have the audio of this, and a group of her friends, the sixth grader told Channel 9 News, where am I here? That when the police arrived at the scene, she heard an officer say, let's put these kids in the back of the car. We're bringing them to headquarters. And then me and my friends started crying our eyes out. Now she's scared because I'm going to have to go, like, in front of the judge and stuff. Let me get some of this audio from our from our audio file here. This is, I believe, the parent refusing to pay this cement fine. And here is an interview with Fox 9, Henry Zeit, who is the father. He says not paying any fine, he's not going to do it. He's not letting the police punish his daughter.
It's snowballed into this giant catastrophe. She's learned the lesson already. Well, I just think that, you know, from the embarrassment of having to go down to the police station, I'll punish her. I'll reprimand my child.
Okay.
No, that's not okay, because she violated the law. And as a result of her violating the law, she is going to be punished. Phil, what that man has said he's going to do is he's going to punish his own daughter, and that's fine, but there is a law against this kind of vandalism, and so her father runs afoul of the law when he says that he is not going to have that child submit to the court.
So why not just have the father then arrested or something? Have the father held accountable? Unlike most of the other kids, Kelly's parents have refused to pay the $250 fine to her middle school and to sign a parent-child and police agreement as punishment. Kelly's father, Henry, says his daughter's an honor student, has already learned her lesson. He vows to fight the fine and the punishment doled out by the police department, which I'm not sure what that was. Lieutenant Mike Colacci of the Middlesex Police Department says the parents helped to come up with what they believe is a suitable punishment for the action of their children, like a 5 o'clock curfew. I don't know what any of this means, but are they going to, what are the police going to do?
Well, the police are supposed to find the family, and the police are supposed to, or at least find that child, and the police are supposed to incarcerate the father if he does not pay the fine. And the father has refused, you see.
So this is a blatant violation of the law. And this is a blatant violation of the standards. And so the police are being told by this father he's not going to pay any fine. Well, that just cannot stand.
All right, so why have a state-sponsored tutor in the middle of this?
Well, because the tutor would then punish the child. The father is not punishing this child adequately.
And what kind of punishment do you think is required?
We think corporal.
We do think corporal punishment. We do not believe that just a fine is sufficient. It was sufficient if the father had paid the fine, but now he will not pay the fine.
And so now you believe that the child needs to be punished physically.
That is correct. And we don't trust the father to dole out the punishment. So you at this time then have to have someone from the state.
And it is not unlike, Phil, you know how a state is going to capital punishment. That is, we're not talking about that, but we do recognize that the state has the right to physically punish a criminal. This is a child. She's not a criminal. She wrote her name in wet cement.
But we do believe she needs some kind of a spanking, some kind of corporal punishment.
What kind of corporal punishment are you guys suggesting the state of New Jersey dole out to this child?
Well, we're talking about just that.
What we would call is a very traditional kind of a spanking on the back of the thighs or a spanking on the hand. Something that does not bruise or injure the child, but does, in fact, create some kind of pain.
And all of this because the father has refused to pay the fine. I don't know that you're going to have this. You know, people are really particular with the way that they raise their kids.
That is true. Yeah.
And you know, people are really particular with anybody laying a hand on their kids. So what makes you think that you're going to get this passed?
Phil, this would never have come up were it not for the fact that we've got fathers just like this man who said he is not going to do anything. He's not going to pay no fine. He's not going to have his daughter be punished. He's not going to submit to anything that the police department in the state said that he had to submit to, see? So we've had to step in.
Well, I think we have some adequate punishment. The father himself, you know, it's a very interesting point of view. You don't think that we have adequate punishment by, say, jailing the father?
No, we don't know, because it's really not the father. Yes, the father is to blame because he's not punishing the child and he's not paying the fine. So the child has no, there's no lesson So the father's the problem, but we still have to get to the child. And the only way to get the child is a court-appointed tutor that will administer this kind of punishment.
All right, our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL. Talking here with Guy Barton and Kurt Quidi about this story. It's in Middlesex Township. I know you guys are having dinner.
We all. I hope it's not too loud, Phil.
No, it's a little loud, but...
Move it in there.
All right. In Middlesex Township, New Jersey, a New Jersey sixth grader wrote her name in wet cement. Big deal. So kids do that all the time. Well, it was technically something she got fined for by the police and the school district. Her father, however, doesn't want to pay the fine. Her father says the child has, she's an honor student, and she has learned her lesson. And he thinks that, I guess it's a matter of principle or something like that. Kurt Quidi and Guy Barton joining us. This statehouse bill would enact legislation so that there is state-administered corporal punishment to children who are not getting it.
Yes, sir, that is correct. And
I'm telling you, and I'm just asking you again, do you really think people are going to allow their kids to be spanked or otherwise physically struck by someone appointed by the state?
I think so, Phil, because parents all over the country have seen what this kind of parenting does. Irresponsible parenting by an individual who feels that he is above the law and that his child, his family is above the law. We've seen this time and again. And I think the American people are at a place now where they are tired of these entitled parents who do not punish, who do not engage in any restrictive behavior, restriction on their children's unacceptable behavior, and as a result, the child goes out and does it again. Guy?
And so we're at a place now where it would be entirely feasible, entirely workable, where you bring a child in, either police department or have the individual from the state children welfare, and spank that child.
Strike the child.
That is correct, yes.
877-876-PHIL here on the Phil Hendry Show. Are you ready for that, folks? Having your kids spanked by a state-appointed tutor, T-U-T-O-R, if your punishment of that child is not adhered to by you, if you refuse the state's punishment, if you refuse the state's fine, or if they don't think you have punished that child properly for what they've done. In this case, the violation of the law. This little girl wrote her name in wet cement. 877-876-PHIL. I don't know if parents would accept that. Maybe we are in a changing world where parents now feel they need help with disciplining their kids because some of these kids are out of control. 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL, the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry. Famous Phil Hendry Show.
877-876-PHIL. Who should discipline children? Kurt Quidi and Guy Barton with us. And I have to say, guys, and they're both state senators from the State House in West Virginia. I appreciate both of you gentlemen coming on this program, and I appreciate what is going to be a controversial point of view for both of you, that when a parent fails to adhere to the law in submitting to punishment for their child. In this case, this little girl fined $250 and write an essay.
That's right.
All right. And when that happens, then the state steps in to punish the child. Now, you know that that is explosive.
Now, Phil, understand, I think when you say it's explosive, I think it's explosive, yes. There's no question about that, because every parent believes that their children are good children, and I believe that most children are good children. We are talking about infinitesimal small percentage of children that need this kind of discipline and have not been getting it.
So you're saying that...
So what we're saying, let me jump in, because I think Guy made a very good point. Most of the people listening to our program tonight will never, ever have a deal with the state of West Virginia or any state coming into their home and taking what we call the flat of that discipline instrument and spanking the back of a child's thighs or their hand. That's not going to happen. But there is the rare time when a parent shows absolutely no interest
in adhering to the law of civilized society, and so that child needs to be disciplined.
Well, here's a man with whose daughter is an honor student.
I understand that.
This is a man who lives in a middle-class town in New Jersey, and you heard the gentleman, and he believes that his daughter is a good kid. And I'm sure that he would be one of those people that would say, I don't think ever my child would ever have to be spanked by a member of the...
I would not go that far. I heard the attitude on that man. If you listen to that tape of that man, he sounded like... Hold on. Listen to that man. He sounded like he thinks he's something special. I think he sounds arrogant. I think he sounds... I don't like him. And if you wouldn't mind, Phil, if you play that one more time, people are going to hear what this band sounds like.
It's snowballed into this giant catastrophe. She's learned the lesson already.
I don't think the embarrassment of having to go down to the police station.
I'll punish her. I'll reprimand my child.
You hear that? I'll punish her. I'll reprimand her. That sounds like an ass. And a man who has had...
Why is that an ass? He may be a man who is overly protective of his daughter for a variety of reasons.
Well, Phil, you cannot say into a microphone across the country, I'll punish my daughter. That child, she had engaged in a violation of the law. It's out of his hands now. And if this law passes, he won't punish that child. The state of New Jersey would punish that child using the flat as some kind of a discipline tool and, redden up a part of that.
Absolutely.
877-876-PHIL. Let's go to some phone calls on the line here as we talk about who disciplines your kid, the state or you. Thomas in San Antonio, you're on the Phil Hendry Show. Go ahead, sir.
I want to say that is totally insane that the state would even consider doing something like that. If you sit there and you punish your child in public, or spank them in public, somebody will call social services on them, and you'll get your child taken away. But now the state wants to step in and do the exact same thing. That's insane.
That is a very good, and that's exactly correct, sir. Because what we are saying now is we are legally sanctioning the Corporal Punishment Act. But we are applying it through a state a sanction and regulated, and that's a very important word, regulated method, so that child is subject to corporal punishment, fully regulated.
The state is going to regulate.
But here's the thing. Don't you guys think that the state and the government has enough control over our lives anyway? And now they're going to step in and say, well, you guys can't corporally punish your kids, but we can.
Well, I think as long as we have parents, you heard that man. I think God was he a little overboard. He said a man sound arrogant. But as long as we have parents that say, well, I'm not going to do that. And my daughter can do anything she wants.
But that's what the government's created. They've created parents like that because we can't punish our kids like we deem necessary. And so now we.
But what are you talking about? That kid that was wet cement in front of if that was wet cement in front of your house, and that kid come up and wrote "F you," would you not want the police to do something about that?
Well, she didn't write that.
But I'm asking the gentleman, if that was wet cement in front of your house.
You know what? It is what it is. It's something that can be fixed.
That's not an answer. That's against the law. That's vandalism.
Do you
want the police to do that? I've got to get that confident.
Go ahead.
Let me give you an answer to that. Here's the problem. Since we've taken away the corporal punishment aspect of
right.
parenting,
F you in front of that.
Now we're having kids that are going into schools and shooting up their schools because they have no discipline at home.
You didn't answer my question. You're saying that girl can write F you and everything good. I'm telling you that's against the law. Now if kid comes down to school, starts shooting up the school, guess what's going to happen to that kid? She's going to get shot and killed. The kid's going to get shot and killed. Are you telling me that we can't do that? Of course we can.
Of course you're going to shoot and kill a kid with a gun, of course, because he's a lethal threat. A kid who is writing in wet cement, you're saying, deserves spanking?
If the father's not going to adhere, you understand what we're saying. The father has refused to pay the fine. The father has refused to have that child write an essay. The father refused every reasonable request of the state of New Jersey and the school to have that child in some way make a recompense for that. And they have a refused. So now the state will come in and smack that, I hate to say it, but you understand, sir. That child has not been disciplined. The father has not been disciplined. You just have smacked that child across the face.
Not across. You said not across the face.
No, we're not talking about across the face. No.
But I mean, who deems what punishment is what punishment fits the crime?
Well, that's worked out in the law. That's worked out in the law. In this case, if there is a violation of the law at the and the parents refuse to pay the fine, now hear me, then that child is taken in hand by a state tutor, and they are given corporal punishment. Not smacked in the face like I didn't mean smacked in the face. I was very emotional about it. I'd like to see a lot of these children smacked.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. We'll be back with the state-sponsored corporal punishment.
Phil Hendry.
Oh, would I love to do that.
World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back here, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. When we talk about things on this show that are controversial, sometimes I have to say to myself, I have to say, and I have Kurt Quede and Guy Barton with me from the West Virginia State Legislature, I got to say, you know, you guys know that you're taking a controversial point of view by saying that the state should step in and discipline children when parents fail. Don't you know that it doesn't do you any good?
Well, Phil, let me answer that question. I'll give Guy a chance here in a minute, but I'm going to answer that question by saying something very similar to you. Phil, I'm not doing a talk show. I'm an elected representative of the state of West Virginia. When I say something that is controversial, when I say something that is going to make people angry, I take my political career in my hand. If you say something controversial on your radio show, it may help you. We're not here to create controversy because I may lose my job. Now,
Well, tell people what you said to me during the break. You said you'd be very happy to say it during the break. Some kid was on your property, right?
I had a young man was running across my property, had a dog. They had killed two mallard ducks that I have on my property because we have a piece of property. I've got a pond running through it. A duck had been killed by this dog. I chased this young man down. I had a shovel. I look at that kid, and he had his dog. It killed two mallard ducks. Very, very valuable animal. And I chased that child down. That boy tripped and fell a fence line. I had a shovel, and I put that shovel to his throat. He had a boy. He had the boy down on the ground with a shovel blade to his throat. And I, as God help me, God help me. I said, may God have mercy on my soul, because I could have driven that blade of that shovel. I don't think they're getting disciplined.
So are you motivated by an anger because of a couple of ducks?
No, I'm not. I'm trying to tell you.
Because I hear in your voice anger, and I hear that you wanted to drive that shovel through that kid's throat. Is that right?
That is correct. That is right, yes. But understand the reason for that. Because somewhere there is a parent not doing his job. Somewhere there's a mother not doing her job. And so that child is not going to get disciplined. If it wasn't for Guy, that child would not have been disciplined. That probably the only discipline that child got was me saying I'd love to take the shovel. I would love to...
Did you threaten to kill him?
I told him, I said, you know what I'd love to do, but I won't do it because it's against the law. I'd love to shove the shovel in your... I don't want to say what I said.
All right. What happened to this kid, by the way?
I had the police come, and they said, well, the mallard ducks were not my property. I said, well, they come here, and they spray every spring. He said, they're not my property. So that child, that dog killed those mallard duck, and that kid, he got away with bloody murder. Father, I'm concerned. I understand that's not murder, Phil, but that was a two beautiful duck that dog killed, and that kid, he got away scot-free, and had Guy taken that shovel, and I don't know, he could have taken that shovel, and he could have brought it down on the head of that kid, and he'd been no worse the way.
We're not talking about hitting a kid in the head with a shovel here, though. You guys are talking about disciplining using what you call some sort of a discipline tool. 877-876-PHIL. Here is Dennis listening on WTKK this evening. Dennis, go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Phil, how you doing?
Fine.
So did you say these two gentlemen that we're speaking with here, they're from Virginia. Is that correct?
I'm from West Virginia. Yes, sir.
I thought Virginia was for lovers. You guys going to change that over to Virginia's for spankers?
It's West Virginia, you dumbass. You know there's a difference, right?
I'll tell you what, I used to live in Virginia, and I used to hear a bunch of stories about
it. No, it ain't Virginia. That's the third time. That's the third time. It's called West Virginia, not Virginia. Get a map.
No. I used to live in Virginia.
You lived in Virginia. That's nice, but it ain't Virginia. It's about West Virginia, not about Virginia.
That's why I'm happy.
All right, Dennis, thanks for your call. 877-876. Phil, here is Rick. Go ahead. You're on the Phil Henry Show, sir.
Hey, a natural animal kills another natural animal, the dog killing the bird, and you want to hit the kid with the shovel? You want to kill him almost? That's ridiculous. What would bring a human to think like that other than pure anger and rage?
I'm talking about discipline a kid who let his dog kill two animals, and that kid not going to finish. He's going to go home to
dog?
His mother. And she's going to kiss him on the lips and give him a nice snack for dinner, something like that.
All right, hold on. Go ahead, sir.
Honestly, it's a natural animal. It's not hurting. It hurt two other natural animals.
It killed two natural animals. What's that mean, natural animal? It's a natural animal, huh? I tell you what, if a natural animal was to eat your kid or something, is that a natural animal, too? You got yourself a duck got fed up by a dog, and a man want to... You go along with that natural animal thing, man. You start to make me nervous.
Well, what are you... this kid is saying that this is something that a duck...
Raw, and it's pure. It's a duck versus dog.
What about a dog? All right, well, let's answer this question. Like, what about a grizzly bear killing a kid?
Yeah, how about that? What you want to do there? Natural animal?
You know what? That happens in Alaska.
It happened.
It happens in Alaska more than you would like.
Yeah, and let's not have it happen. Let's kill that bear. But you let it happen to a little tiny kid.
Let's go kill everything.
No, I didn't say kill everything.
Sir, I'm a hunter.
You must be. You got two people on the line here about as dumb as.
Hold on for a minute. Are you saying, Nick, that you don't destroy a bear that kills a kid, or what are you saying?
Oh, this man wants to have a bear eat a kid.
The kid goes out
and walk away.
Hold on.
If the kid goes out in nature
about that.
And is on his own, and the bear comes along and kills him, that is, understandable.
That's not
going to
happen.
Shouldn't have been there.
But it does happen. Because the fishing game is going to find that bear, and they're going to kill that bear. They're going to shoot it dead. And the same thing going to happen in Kansas or any other place. If an animal attacks a human being, all bets off. See? So I don't know what you're talking about, but I will tell you that...
Well, this animal didn't attack a human. This was an animal that attacked two ducks.
Anger issue. I mean, you almost killed him with the shovel because he killed two ducks?
See, let me ask you something. How old are you? Let me ask you.
I'm 25, sir. I'm 25 years old.
You sound like you're young, and you sound like the kind of guy that would come across my property. You sound like the kind of guy to come across my property and kill a duck.
Why would you say that?
He just does.
So
you sound like it.
You're accusing me of something false. I sound like that.
I'm accusing you of a guy that would kill a duck.
Well, I am a hunter, so naturally I go on hunting property that I do.
I think the only thing you hunt are boys. I think you hunt up little boys.
Hey!
Whoa! Seriously?
What's that about?
Maturity level.
This guy telling me that he's telling me I'm
a
maturity level. You want a duck? You want a duck? Yes, I am an elected official. Yes, I am.
Well, what are you talking about? Why did you talk that way to this man?
Because this guy sounds like the kind of guy.
I'm being
give it to another man.
I'm mature and
not even have the decency to give him a reach around.
God.
Oh wow.
What are you talking about?
I'm talking about this man here. Come on my property, kill a duck. I chase him down with a shovel, and I'm supposed to squirt tears now because he's all.
This is not the guy. This is the guy that's calling the show.
No, we understand that, but I think what Guy's saying is this man doesn't understand the guy had a particular love of the mallard duck. Now the man come on his property with a dog and kill that.
Were the police involved? Look, if you kill any wildlife within, say, in a protected preserve, let's say, in a park, in a protected aviary, whatever, it's against the law. Were the police called?
Go to jail.
Right. Were the police called in this instance?
I called the police, and they said these two ducks were wild duck come on my property. I said, they come on my property every spring. The cop said, well, they're not yours. I said, let me ask you something, cop. Do you know that ducks do come back to the same place in the spring? He said, I'm not a wildlife. I'm a cop. I said, well, you look like the dumbest. I called a guy Barney Fife, and I made a bunch of smart-ass remarks, and I shouldn't have said that. But the point is, he
you're
let that
an
kid
elected
go.
Official and you're making that kind of remark to police officers?
Let me tell you something. Let me tell you something. This guy come on, I said, arrest that kid. He said, I can't arrest him because he didn't do anything wrong with his duck.
Yeah,
I said, you know a duck.
The dog?
You know a duck comes back. He said, I know ducks come back. He says to me, and then he makes a crack about Donald Duck and Daffy Duck. I said, you the dumbest Barney Fife mother.
Oh, well, no
and
wonder the cop didn't
official?
Do anything, man. You're lucky that you didn't. Yeah, you didn't get. You didn't. You're lucky the cop didn't arrest you.
Yes, I am an elected official. How many times do you want me to tell you that? Well, look, I think the young man's making a good point. You don't want to speak that way in a disrespectful way to a police officer. By the same token, I think what happened with guys, he won that duck, you know. He won a duck.
What do you mean he won a duck?
I'd won a duck in a contest. I brought the two onto the property because it's something at the church. I brought the two on the property. These were wild ducks that had come on the property. They were not mine.
Okay, but you gave the cop a bunch of crap.
That is correct.
All right, well, thank you very much, sir. Thank you, Nick, for your call. 877-876-PHIL. Let's go to Adam in Bowling Green. Go ahead, Adam. You're on the Phil Hendry Show. Oh, yeah, Adam, drop. Let's take a break then, huh?
Well, I'd rather not break if you don't mind.
I'm going to take a break, okay?
Oh, shoot.
Take it easy. Just sit still. 877-876-PHIL. We'll be back with more. Kurt Queedy and Guy Barton. Should the state discipline your kids? Should the state actually have an individual come in and spank your kids when you fail to discipline your children properly? They are passing or at least working on a piece of legislation in West Virginia that will make that happen. 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
I'm just giving me a duck.
World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Our last segment here with Guy Burton and Kurt Queedy from the West Virginia State Legislature as we talk about something controversial, and you guys, you sent me straight, and I appreciate that. You're not necessarily going to win yourself many friends with this legislation, although when you introduce legislation that essentially says the state should step in and physically discipline children when the parents fail, you're not going to win yourself any friends, but you must have had a constituency. Kurt, why don't you take that?
Well, you are right. Well, we do have a constituency. We have enough, I think, of the citizenry of West Virginia, especially the district that I'm in here, which is a western part of West Charleston, who are tired of seeing these children running wild, whether they are violating the law by... And we're not talking about something like drug dealing, felony, where or misdemeanor where you are incarcerated or arrested. We're talking about juvenile law and interdicting here, Phil, where you have a chance, you know.
Let me just add one thing, Phil. I've got a kid running through a restaurant, and I'm tired of it, and you are too. These are children, 8-year-old and everything. Now, I don't want to have a tell a parent, yeah, you kick your kid, and if I stick my leg out, I trip some punk. Talk about that. We feel that the authorities should step in. Whenever a child is not being disciplined properly by their parent, if a child is making too much noise in a public place, if a child's disturbing people in a restaurant, you understand what I'm saying?
Well, what about the management of the restaurant?
Well, the management, that would be the first people. But a lot of times these restaurants don't do anything. They'll just let a child run between the table and behave in such a manner as it is disturbing, you know. And so when the restaurant doesn't do anything, that's when we feel any individual in that restaurant can go and get someone. You know, they, in that case, like a peace officer, something like that.
So you have to run out and get a cop. 877-876-PHIL is the number here on the Phil Hendry Show, talking to Kurt Queedy and Guy Barton. And so I go outside, I get a cop. But I wanted to ask you, Guy, you mentioned kids running through restaurants. If the restaurant doesn't do anything, and you go out and you get a cop, now what?
Well, in that
instance, Phil, now that's what you're talking about. You get that cop, and the cop can go ahead and administer this discipline.
So you're going to have a cop spanking a kid?
Well, you'd have to, yeah.
You'd have to do that in that situation where this brat... let me say, young man, say that. If I got a personal problem, I got a personal problem. But I've taken very, and I'm looking at people, and a kid comes up to me and says, I'm going to run through the restaurant, I don't give a sweet Jesus, and I want to smack it, I want to do things, but I can't, you understand, and a parent won't do anything. I want to stick my leg out and trip it. Now, you understand the injury that can occur to a child if you push an adult far enough, and you know what happened down there in Houston, Texas.
What do you mean, what happened in Houston, Texas?
Well, that lady, when she drowned those children.
And that woman was psychotic. That woman, what are you talking about?
What I'm saying is, if you don't discipline children and they drive someone out of their mind, next thing you know, you got a woman, she's going to drown all five of them. And go out, just lickety-split, go out and have herself a root beer.
And that woman, that Andrea Yates, was psychotic. She was hearing voices. She murdered those children as the result of psychotic hallucination and the disintegration of her personality. It had nothing to do with the fact that her children were not disciplined.
Well, I understand what you're saying, Phil, but and I see that you're taking a much more liberal view in terms of law enforcement. We're trying to, what we need is law and order. You know, we do, Phil.
Well, law and order is one thing, man. Andrea Yates did not kill her children because they were not disciplined enough. She killed them because she had a serious problem. Samantha in Anchorage, Alaska, you're on the Phil Hendry Show. Go ahead, please.
Oh, you're
she was
talking about
she was nuts. You understand that?
Yeah.
Yes, ma'am. Oh, yes, ma'am, we are.
Yeah. You're talking about disciplining other people's children?
We're talking about a state bill that we are introducing in West Virginia, ma'am, that would, if, as a parent, an individual does not exert enough control of that child, we can go on in and go ahead and smack it or spank it or however you want.
No, you have no right. I'm just saying, because I have two kids of my own, and if you try to put your hands on one of them, you're going to turn black and blue, buddy.
Well, I wouldn't do it. Yeah, this would be the state tutor, a state individual, under state administration. You understand, it'd be state regulation. So they'd say, well, your daughter is accused. Let's say you got a little child that was running through a restaurant and making everything.
I don't care. I don't care who you are.
I would not do it. I wouldn't do it. It would be the state. And where the lady live in?
Alaska.
Well, the state of Alaska. Ma'am, can I say something, ma'am? I understand your concern. Would you rather have the state administer? Well, first of all, we'd like you to, but if you don't, and I'm not saying you wouldn't, but let's say there's parents that won't. Would you like to have that child injured by a patron in a restaurant who sticks their leg out and trips that kid and they go flying? Yeah, they could fly through a glass window. You don't want that. So that's why then the state comes in, smacks the kid or whatever you want to call it, and the kid shuts up.
Are you telling me that you're going to spank that child to protect it from another adult doing something worse?
That is our thinking, yeah, because that's what that has happened, yeah. See what I'm saying, man? Hello, ma'am.
Go ahead, Samantha. What the hell is with the phone call here? Ma'am, you there?
Yeah.
All right. Go ahead. Do you have a comment, ma'am?
Yeah, I do. It's just plain and simple. Nobody's going to put that.
I don't think she's got nothing she wants to say.
Will you let the lady talk? I can't hear her. Go ahead, ma'am.
No, finish talking, buddy. Finish talking.
I was going to say, if your kid is running through a restaurant, ma'am, and I stick my leg out and I trip your kid.
What's the matter? Are you too stubborn to understand and listen to what I have to say? I'm just saying you have to try to put your hands on my kid. You watch what I do to you, buddy. I'm being dead ass serious.
I doubt it. Seriously, man. You sound like a little squirty woman. I don't think you could do all that much. Sure. I'm saying, what are you about 5'2", eyes are blue?
What do you
think you can do? You know, has anybody seen my gal?
How are you, buddy?
Let me say this. If you,
how tall are you? Answer my question.
All right, we got to, you got that from Full Metal Jacket, too. That's great. All right, so,
Well, that woman, she said she didn't know that they stacked.
I heard what she said.
Oh, if that lady was standing in front of me, I would drop kick her. Now, a little tiny woman about 5'8", ain't going to hurt her. I mean, 5'2", I'm 5'8". I'm 5'8", I weigh 300 pounds, and I love all of it. I love me, and my wife love all of me. I love all of me, and she love all of me. Now, a little lady there, about 5'2", I dropkick her, and I tell you, if you ever saw that one game, Kansas City, Miami, 1971, Gary Apremian, that's 55 yards. And I can tell you,
I'm not interested in what you were going to do. You said something that I was very concerned with. You said that in a restaurant, if a child came running by your table, you'd stick your leg out and trip it?
Well, no. I think, Phil, if I could take it in a two-part answer.
What do you mean a two-part answer?
First of all, I would. I'd trip the child, but I don't want to trip the child. And if I could just take the first part second. First of all.
What do you mean the first part second?
Well, that was on quiz show, see? And
forget about quiz show. I'm asking you, if you trip a kid, you're saying you would trip a kid, and so you're passing this legislation so the state will smack the kid around.
Well, that's correct, Phil, because what Guy wanted to do, and I think I'm not talking out of school, he wanted to trip a kid, and he had it all planned out. He went into Houston's. He knew where he won't sit. He knew where the grease bin was, where they make the sweet potato fries, you know.
I love them, too.
And he knew how hard he'd have to trip a kid to have that kid sail right in a sweet potato fry.
Yeah. And now, if you got me making a plan like that, there's something wrong with me. There's something seriously wrong with me. I almost took a kid out with a shovel blade. You heard me.
Yeah, there's something wrong with you. That doesn't mean we pass a law so that your violence fantasies are endorsed by the state.
Well, I mean, he was going to trip a kid. He had figured it all out, how hard he'd have to trip the kid.
I know, he'd go sailing into the sweet potato fry grease.
That's right.
We'll be back. We have Emery Clayton on to talk about Ted Williams, the homeless man. What a story. What a beautiful story. Did you see him meeting his mother? And then we have our news hour coming up in about an hour with Robert Leonard and Bud Dickman, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, Sweet Potato Fries.
Look at his breath, man.
Phil Hendry.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
The state of Hawaii has said that President Obama...
You're skeptical every day, and then you go to church and you get on your knees and you pray to an invisible man.
In his speech yesterday, Speaker Boehner spoke of giving
no
government...
No person except a natural-born citizen or a citizen of the United States.
Fire. You son of a bitch.
World famous Phil Hendry Show, every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, on the news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Where truth is our bitch, where we go through the looking glass and beyond to places other talk shows wish they could go, but they can't, man, and they never will. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. We talk about issues, we talk about attitudes, we talk about the culture, we talk about it all, but we do it in a way that no one else can do it, and we join you here in our second hour with Professor Emery Clayton, and more to the point, we're going to be talking about Ted Williams, the homeless man with the golden voice, and he reunited with his mother today, and if you saw the video, I have no shame whatsoever in telling you that I had tears in my eyes. It was a very emotional thing to see this man reunited with his mother in New York, this very sweet woman who was all dressed up, and he was too, and his reaction to her, unbelievable. 877-876-PHIL. So Professor Emery Clayton will be along with us in just a moment to talk about that. And let's see. He got a voiceover gig with Kraft Foods? Did he really? And MSNBC. Okay. Very good. Kraft Foods and MSNBC. Dude, that is, and those are union gigs. So that's going to be some nice change for him. Our website, philhendryshow.com, is where you really get the full story of the Phil Hendry Show. This month, as a matter of fact, our video cast will turn into a veritable television show as we show you every night behind the scenes and in front of the scenes how we do this show. We have a one-hour uncensored pre-show. We do our three-hour radio show, and all of it is on video, even during the commercial breaks, even Phil losing his temper, even me crying, weeping, all the things that we do. You can see that as well as go to our archives, listen to our podcasts. It's all there at philhendryshow.com, so pick yourself up a backstage pass. We do have Professor Emery Clayton from L.A. Canyon College on the line with us, and we have the story of, as I said, Ted Williams, this homeless guy. We'll get Professor Clayton on the phone here. I do want to play a little bit of the audio as well. It's quite compelling. Professor Clayton, how are you, sir?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
All right. Why don't we hold the line here for just a moment, Professor, and I will talk to you in a moment. Here is Ted Williams He is the, as I said, this homeless gentleman who reunited with his mother today.
Hi, Mommy. I know I feel the same way, Mommy. I love you, Mother. I've been wanting to see you for the past hours, and it seems like everybody has. Hi, Mommy. I'm home. I told you I was coming this year. Hi, I don't look the best, but I'm home. I got a haircut. I love you, Mommy. I'm not, Mom. I'm not. I'm through with it all. God, this happened for me. You always told me to pray. And I've been praying, Mommy. You know what's going on?
Oh, wow. And so, and he called her Mommy. You know, I guess there's a sort of an infantile thing that kicks in for all of us. Here he also did the voiceover introduction for the Today Show this morning.
From NBC News, this is Today with Matt Lauer and Meredith Vieira, live from Studio 1A in Rockefeller Plaza.
And welcome to Dan this Thursday morning, except for the fact that Gipley ordered the names wrong. I thought Ted Williams did a great job.
That wasn't his fault. Good. That's the way it was on the script.
Professor Clayton, I just wanted to bring up, he's a Brooklyn-born man. He was a panhandler, hadn't seen his mother in 20 years, the man with the golden voice, embracing his mother. She called him the prodigal son. Professor Clayton, your feelings on this man, isn't it about rebirth?
Well, I don't know if I want to necessarily put a biblical interpretation on it, Phil. I heard the prodigal son reference, and I think that was something that his mother brought up. I will not deny that I thought that it was a emotional display, and I'm certainly aware of the fact that a mother and a son seeing each other for the very first time in 20 years is an emotional moment. But let's not forget, if we could, Phil, for just a moment, let's not forget the larger picture. And I think we forget the larger picture, and I know that you're going to take some exception with me on this. I don't like the media orchestrating these things. I don't like the media getting its thrills showing a black man living underneath a bridge. I don't like the media getting its kicks showing a black man having to panhandle change for whites that are driving by, so as to get himself work or a haircut or a bath. I think that this is demeaning to the experience of a subsect of society that still has a very low life condition.
And well, certainly you don't begrudge this man getting a job.
I don't begrudge anybody anything, but I reserve the right to comment on how this all come about. Now, this brother has met his mother. He is apparently happy, but let's not forget something here. When the lights are turned off and the cameras are packed up and all of the big movie stars and all these people go back to their big mansions and all these TV reporters go back to another story, Ted Williams still going to be there. And what will happen to that man? In all likelihood, he will be dropped like a hot potato, only to hit the pavement and get back to that glass, what we call it, I don't want to call it the dirty word, but we call it a glass phallus, if you will. Go back to that glass phallus, smoking that crack and drinking all that alcohol. So what's going to happen to Ted Williams is more important than Professor Emery Clayton and what has happened to him.
Are you saying, Professor Clayton, we have Professor Emery Clayton here talking about Ted Williams. First of all, let me ask something. You have said that you thought it was very emotional, him meeting his mother, and he will be in touch with his mom.
I don't know that that's the case. So this man, the last I heard, this man's living in Ohio. Now, are you telling me that someone bought him a penthouse apartment or something?
You know, I don't know if they bought him a penthouse apartment, but I do know that he apparently has a job with MSNBC, and that is a network located in New York. So he would be close to his mother.
All right.
And he has a voiceover gig with Kraft. Now, voiceover gigs are generally one shot, and then they move on, you know?
Well, that's my point. So he's going to do a voiceover. And you say, well, you know more about it than I do, but Kraft is a food company?
Yes, sir.
All right. So he's going to do a, he's going to do a commercial for macaroni and cheese, so some white children can get their macaroni and cheese. That you're trying to tell me? And this story becomes popular, even more popular, because here's this man who is saying to the white, yeah, you know, I was living under a bridge. Let me tell you white kids about your mac and cheese now. You know,
why does it have to be like that, you know?
No, it doesn't have to be. That's the way it is, Phil. This story is only popular because it shows a black man going to the white man on his knees. And
oh, come on. You know, you're sounding like a cliche now.
No, sir, I'm not.
No, you are sounding like a cliche to say that this is the only reason.
It's not the only reason. You listen to what I'm saying, Phil. It's not the only reason, but it powers the story. It powers the story when you show this African-American man lifted up from this existence, living under a bridge. And now comes the white father. And
do you, what is it? Let's get to it. You resent any assistance from the white community. It almost is a throwback to, and maybe it's not throwback, it's a Nation of Islam kind of an attitude. It's a black nationalist attitude.
No, I'm not. Look at. Don't start wading into water that's too deep for you, okay? That's got, you don't know what you're talking about.
Well, hold on for a minute. I said, I don't know what I'm talking about. You're saying that this guy getting this assistance, you've brought race into it right off the bat. And
well, why did you have me on your program?
I knew that you would.
Exactly.
And I knew that you would have a unique take, but I didn't know that you would devalue this story completely because we're talking about I'm getting sidetracked. They're showing some girl on TV with a really big butt, and they're saying she's fat, and she doesn't look fat to me.
Well, maybe you ought to watch the TV commercial because you don't sound like you know exactly what you're talking about here.
No, I'll just turn the TV off. But the fact is, you say that this shows a white man going to the black man on his knees.
I don't say that it's the white man, it's the black man going to the white man on his knees, no. But I take that back. But I am saying, this story has no value at all in the popular media without the aspect of it that shows a black man living under a bridge and how, in my opinion, there's some whites that get their kicks watching that man who lived under that bridge. Then he goes off and calls his mother mommy. Now, I have to tell you something. I understand the emotion that man felt, but it sickens a little something inside of me. And I want to be very careful, but it sickens a little something inside of me to listen to a black man call on the television, mommy, it. So I don't know, Phil. You can take what you want out of that. But there is something about this story that gives me the creeps. And maybe that's it.
So, in your opinion, this story, there's more, this story has no real substance. This story is about illusion. This story is about, excuse me, I've got something wrong with my throat.
You're watching that woman with a big butt on TV.
Hold on for a minute. I had to take a sip of the Coca-Cola, Professor. I apologize. I'm not getting sick. My throat just got dry. You're saying the story has no center, that this story is all about illusion, that this story is all about fluff, that there is no heart to this story.
No. I did not say there's no heart to the story. I said that the media has missed the heart to the story. The story is about a man pulling himself up. But the media, like this thing you just played now, with these white women sitting in a studio. And
there you go again with race.
I'm not talking about race. I am to a point, but they're the white women. Now let's have the black man do a trick. Look at it right here. I can cut his hair, I can put him in a suit, and I can stick him in front of a microphone. Now I'm going to do a trick.
Okay, hold on. I think you're really, you talk about devaluing somebody. I think you're doing it right now.
I'm not devaluing a man. I'm saying that the two white women did that.
We talk about the women on the Today Show?
I don't know, whatever that was that you just played.
All right, hold the line here as Professor Emery Clayton joins us. We talk about Ted Williams, the homeless man, reunited with his mother today. A very emotional scene. Apologize again, ladies and gentlemen, for having a little bit of a coughing fit there. But he is talking, Professor Clayton, about Mr. Williams in a decidedly different way. He's saying that this is a man who is doing the announcing this morning on the Today Show because it's a trick that the black man is performing for the two white women, and the fact that the media gets its kicks showing some guy living under a bridge. And, you know, we seem to be back right into the middle of all of this, that this is about race and not about the redemption of a human being, which I feel is at the very heart of this story. As his mother said, the prodigal son returning. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL. We'll get back. We'll play, I guess maybe we have a little more audio, but we will get more into the story of Ted Williams, the homeless man with the golden voice. Professor Emery Clayton joining us as well here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
It's the Phil Hendry Show. Listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Hey, welcome back on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. We have Professor Emery Clayton talking with us about Ted Williams, a homeless man with a golden voice, reuniting with his mother after being apart 20 years. He's been hired to do a voiceover job for Kraft, and MSNBC has hired him to do some voiceover work. Professor Clayton is a teacher of urban studies at L.A. Canyon College. What's wrong with this picture? You don't like it. Everybody is feeling good.
It's not that I don't like it.
But everyone's feeling good about this, and you're not.
It's not that I don't like it. I see through a different prism. And one of the things I do in my teaching profession, Bill, I have a lot of these young people come into my class, and it is my job to give them a new pair of eyeballs, if you want to call it that. I give them new eyes to look at the world. Because these young people will come into my classroom, and most of them have opinions like a lot of you people, like you do and a lot of you, the people that listen to your program. And what I do with the young people in my class is I say to them, you don't want to go out into the world looking at the world the way these people do. You want to go into the world looking at it a different way. So when I have an opportunity to be on your program, I'm not saying I can change anybody's mind in your listening audience, because I will be very honest with you, Phil. I think you're too far gone, and so are a lot of these people that are listening to you right now. But the students that I have, I can say to them, look at this Ted Williams, a black man. Now, is he a monkey on the end of a leash with an organ grinder? Or is he a man that's being raised up into a new station in life? You'd be surprised some of the answers you get. And I'm not saying anything, I'm just saying, isn't it possible to look at it that way? Isn't it possible for me to look at Ted Williams, the homeless man, not as a man who was the prodigal son and brought home to meet his mother, but instead is a chimpanzee on the end of a leash held by a white man? That is that.
You know, that I'll tell you what it is. It's an extremely explosive opinion. Extremely explosive. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL. A monkey on the end of a leash, a monkey with a couple of cymbals and an organ grinder. Is there nothing in this story where, even though the principals involved are, it seems to be, the benefactors of Mr. Williams are white people at a radio station or on a TV show, but are these not just people who care?
I think they are people that care. I think they are people that care. I think they're people that care, but they also care about the love they're going to get from the TV station. I think they are people that care, but they also care about the autograph they're going to sign, because they brought this black man out from underneath a rock, because they found themselves this black man and got him out from underneath a bridge, living like what do you call them that live under a bridge? You call it troll. They got themselves a troll. So there are a lot of different ways to look at this. Don't just look at it one way and get shucked and jived into believing that that's how it is.
877-876-PHIL with Professor Emery Clayton. Here is Alan in San Antonio. Alan, go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Hey, how's it going this morning?
Fine.
Hey, I just want to comment about this Professor Numbnut there. I mean, boy, What is your problem, my man? Like,
why don't you watch your language? Why don't you watch your language, you dumbass?
Otherwise, they're going to stick you, you know what they're going to do?
They're going to put you under a bridge, and they're going to drag your ass out someday. See how you like it.
Your mom over there, like, you have to totally F up, my man. You know,
I
mean, you need to get fired tomorrow morning.
You call me numb nuts. You already showed how stupid you are. You showed how stupid you are. You lost with the first words out of your mouth. You lost with the first word out of your mouth. What are you talking about?
Everybody makes mistakes. I'm not saying he can't make mistakes. I'm saying you're knocking him down. I'm knocking down the TV station for putting the black man on a leash.
Is that what you like?
You're also prejudiced. I could tell in your voice. Against who? Against you. You got no morals. I mean, you have no understanding of life at all. You ought to be glad.
Who am I prejudiced against? Everybody makes mistakes in life.
When people get uplifted, man, you ought to be glad for anybody that gets an uplift.
I don't make those kind of mistakes.
I guess you were born with a golden spoon in your mouth, right?
You don't care about everybody else.
You really are.
You know what?
Selfish.
I don't care about you. The day they put a leash on you and give you two symbols and a little bellboy hat, I don't care.
That's exactly what I'm saying. And it didn't cost you a red piece, what you just said, right? Let me ask you something.
Because someday, I may be looking at you living under a bridge wearing a bellboy hat. Then what am I going to say?
Well, you know what? You think yourself living under a bridge. How would you feel about living under a bridge? I don't want to live under a bridge.
Okay, if I lived on a bridge, I don't want them to put me on the TV station.
I guess you have never been through hard times, right? You don't know what it's like to go through hard times. I've been through plenty of hard times,
but I never let Meredith Vieira turn me into some kind of a, what do you want to call it?
I don't know. You tell me. What do you call it?
What do you call it that she turned him into? What's it called?
What do you mean, what's it called?
You see what I'm saying? Now you're profiling, my man.
She called him a what?
What do you mean she called him a what? He did the announcing.
Oh, the bellboy hat. You know what, brother? If I ever see you.
All right, hold on. Phil Henry Show. We'll be right back. Phil Henry. Here in the world-famous Phil Henry Show, as we talk to Professor Emery Clayton about Ted Williams, the homeless man with the golden voice. It was today that he was reunited with his mother, and it was quite an emotional thing. He called her mommy, and he hugged her, and then he was on the Today Show, I think, before that, and did the announcing on the Today Show. This man, he's been through quite a run here over the last couple of weeks from being homeless to suddenly national television and meeting his mother. And with me is Professor Emery Clayton. The guy asked the question. You wanted to answer that, the last caller?
Yeah, I want to answer that. The man said he did that. That man asked me had I ever been down on my luck. And I wasn't about to take the bait and spill my life story to him because he called me numbnut or whatever he called me. So I'm not about to lay my story out to that brother who had no respect for the things that I was trying to say. The things I'm trying to say are simply this. I got a young man here. I'm looking on television. This young man is Ted Williams. I say young man. He's 53. He's a young man. And that man crying to his mother and getting on television and doing the hoochie coo and the funky chicken too for that couple of white women. Let me tell you something, my friend. That's not for us. Now, I looked on TV the other day. What do I see? Every time I turn around, I'm looking at a little white girl. She had a drug problem here. I look at another white man, that Lindsay Lohan girl. You know who she is.
Yeah.
And that Robert Downey Jr., you know who he is, right?
Yeah, I know. There's a lot of people have a lot of problems.
You know, and every time I'm looking, all these white people with their crack cocaine and their heroin and all of this. Now, I had a drug problem, too. I was living on the street. I did things, and I was... I can tell you that I did things and went places that I cannot talk about. That's how vile they are. I went places and I did things that I will not talk about because you will not want to... I don't think the people will be able to keep their dinner down. Now, do you think I'm going to go on television and go, hey, mommy, hi, mama, all of that? And what about, I'm looking at a list here, Courtney Love, a heroin addict. Eddie Van Halen, he got a cocaine problem, had part of his tongue taken out. So he talking like a stumbling, muttering. You got Drew Barrymore, not a little white girl. Do you see any of them living under a bridge? No, you don't see that. You want to know why? Because those people have got all kind of support system. Now, here comes a brother, had to pick himself up. And I'm supposed to believe that he got some job from Meredith Vieira, giving him a bellboy hat.
And where are you getting this bellboy hat thing?
That dancing monkey. And Gary Busey, there's another one. Here's a white man all over Twitter with his smart-ass drug addict, no-count white trash. Now, when I was living on the street, and I had a drug problem, and I was a criminal, and I was a pimp, I did a lot of things. But when I finally cleaned up, I cleaned up the Emory Clayton way. I didn't need no help.
Look at Emory, I'm not...
Hold on for a minute. I didn't need no help. I didn't have to put on a bellboy hat. And then you talk about, what's that other, Eminem, this white boy, all these hip-hop artists love this white man. He's addicted to sleep medication. This kid, this Eminem, is addicted to no-dose. You imagine what a candy-ass, no-count white boy he is.
What do you mean he's addicted to no-dose?
He's addicted to some over-the-counter speed. Taking that no-dose or whatever they take.
So, who, Eminem?
Yeah, Eminem. You didn't read about that.
No, I didn't read about that.
This guy is such a lightweight that he's got a no-dose problem. Now, let me say this about where we're going here. You can do anything you want, but don't tell me that this man is not being treated differently, almost like he's some kind of a prize pony.
Well, you know, I got to...
Now, hold on for a minute. You don't think he's being treated differently?
I will tell you this. Courtney Love or Drew Barrymore or Gary Busey, none of them are living under bridges, okay?
No, they weren't, but Michael Jackson wasn't living under a bridge either, and he was treated like a freak. You know that as well as I do, don't you?
Well, I don't know what you mean by a freak. I mean, I think...
You know as well as I do the man's treated like a freak. Same thing with this Ted Williams. So you take that white boy, Eminem, and he's addicted to Midol or Motrin or whatever the hell.
What do you mean, Midol?
He's got some lightweight drug addict. The point I'm making here is when Ted Williams and all the TV cameras are shut off, Ted Williams by himself, all them white people are going to... They're going to all fade away. He'll be sitting there by himself in the dark. He'll be sitting there by himself in the dark. All them white people will have faded away. They will all have melted away. And it'll just be Ted Williams sitting there in the dark. And the only way anybody will know he's there is if he smiles. And that Rush Limbaugh...
All right, I understand, okay?
That Oxycontin.
I understand. I only hope, and I'll bet you money, that it doesn't happen like that. The one guy that he's got to rely on is himself. The one guy that cannot let him down is himself. He can't go back to the drugs. He can't go back to the booze. He can't go back to the life. He has to stay away from it.
Well, no thanks to you.
It, what am I going to do to the guy?
Well, you're gonna treat him like that freak. You're going to want to go in there and say, hey, where's Ted Williams? Put that bellboy hat on him and let me see him bang them cymbals together.
Yeah.
Did I say Rush Limbaugh Oxycontin?
Yes, you did say Rush Limbaugh Oxycontin, okay?
But where would a white man be if Ted Williams or Ted Bell fails and goes back to the drugs? What happens if Ted Bell goes back to his drugs? They ain't going to put him in Betty Ford. They'll mock him and throw him out on the street. Show he's a failure. But Ted Bell, he'll go to Betty Ford Clinic, beat up a couple of attendants, And still people are kissing.
Get out of here. All right. We'll take a break and be back. Our news hour coming up. This is the world famous Phil Hendry Show. Still to come, a UFC Ted Bell. We'll beat up a couple of attendants at Betty Ford. Still to come, a UFC fighter gets a visit from the Secret Service after saying he wants to fight President Obama. Plus, the news hour with Bud Dickman and Robert Leonard here on the world famous Phil Hendry. Is he on the line?
Here.
Ted?
Yeah, that's Ted Bell. What are you saying?
We'll get to you later. Thank you. We'll be right back. Phil Hendry Show.
This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, Saturday night. We're back from our Christmas vacation Saturday night. We will be on KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio in Los Angeles, and also on our video cast. We'll have our KFI show as well. You can join us at philhendryshow.com to watch our live video cast every night. Now a six-night-a-week phenomenon. And what, Bud?
You know, people saying they're getting echo and everything.
Don't worry about the technical stuff. We'll work it out, okay? We'll work it out, baby. All right. Bill O'Reilly says oceanic tides are caused by God, and there's no explanation. Did you know that, Robert?
You can explain why there are tides.
Scientific.
Yeah.
Well, Bill O'Reilly apparently either forgot or didn't know, or I don't know. Bill O'Reilly is a fascinating guy. In the hallowed halls of the media, where we work, in the inner sanctum. What the hell was that, man?
Right at that restaurant where that guy was at, he's talking about how he put a bellboy hat on him.
But turn off the restaurant. Did he hang the phone up?
Uh-uh.
That was Professor Clayton, okay?
That's funny. You talk about being a monkey with a symbol.
Yeah, I'll bet you thought it was funny, okay? But I didn't think it was funny at all. Putting a bellboy hat on. You know, all he did was degrade that man. He wasn't successful, though. What did you think of that, Robert?
Well, you asked me, because I'm black?
Yeah.
I thought it was good.
What do you mean you thought it was good?
I mean, I like the Ted Williams guy.
Okay. Now then, Bill O'Reilly says oceanic tides are caused by God, forgets the basic scientific explanation. Now, Bill O'Reilly, as I said, is a guy who is, you know, in the inner sanctum of news and talk radio and all that jazz. He's, most people, even conservatives consider him to be a little on the dumb side. He's not the brightest bulb on the tree. There's no... You know, you can talk to cats that are dyed-in-the-wool conservative people, and they'll say, O'Reilly, he blew it big when he said that the Malmedy massacre was caused by the U.S. Army. So right there, it tells you, you know, what?
What's that?
The Malmedy massacre happened in World War II. The SS slaughtered some American soldiers.
Oh, okay.
And O'Reilly said it was caused by the Americans. It was actually Germans. So right there was a glaring example of, and I have to hand it to Keith Oberfuhrer, because he said if you ever want to get one of O'Reilly's people off your back, if you've got the guy with the microphone sticking in your face, just ask, hey, how's Bill doing with that studying up on Malmedy? You know, and surely they'll edit it out. But anyway, what causes oceanic tides to crest and fall? According to conservative opinion host Bill O'Reilly, it's a mystery. Here is O'Reilly talking to atheist David Silverman on the show today, and man, they got their money's worth out of this poor guy today. Here he is talking to David Silverman. He says he believes in God because no one can explain why tides crest and fall.
You're skeptical every day, and then you go to church and you get on your knees and you pray to an
Correct.
Invisible man in the sky.
Invisible man in the sky.
You think that's a scam?
No, I don't. I'll tell you why.
A man that was built by a man?
I'll tell you why it's not a scam, in my opinion.
Uh-huh.
Right? Tide goes in, tide goes out. Never a miscommunication. You can't explain that. You can explain why the tide goes in.
Tide goes in, tide goes out.
See, the water, the tide goes in, and it goes out, Mr. Silverman.
Maybe
it always comes in.
On top of Mount Olympus, who's making the tides go in and out.
No, but you can't explain
that. A scam and a myth are the same. The
myth
and religion are the same thing. It doesn't matter if I can explain it.
It doesn't? The reason why I laughed is it sounded for a moment as if the guy thought am I sitting here with a maniac? Is this guy mentally ill?
You're skeptical every day, and then you go to church, and you get on your knees, and you pray to an invisible man in the sky.
Invisible man in the sky.
You don't think that's a scam?
No, I don't. I'll tell you why it's not a scam, in my opinion. Tide goes in, tide goes out. Never a miscommunication. You can't explain that. You can explain why the tide goes in.
Tide goes in, tide goes out.
I don't know. The look on the guy's face, they're running it. In fact, it just so happens I got Oberfuhrer on right now, and he's rolling it over and over. You have to understand something. Oberman is equally, look, it's television, and Phil Hendry, we all are equally to blame. We all look like jackballs at least once, if not more so, in our lives. But O'Reilly seems to step in it more than other people. To say something as glaringly stupid as it was the U.S. Army that caused the Malmedy massacre, that is an unbelievably dumb thing to say. It's beyond dumb. It's almost criminally dumb. It's an insult to the Americans that lost their lives that day that were gunned down in the snow by members of the Waffen-SS. But then we have Michelle Bachmann, you know, who says that $200 million a day is what Obama was spending traveling through India. Now, I'm sure people can bring up examples of similar stupidity on the part of the left, but I'm really not talking here about the right or the left. I'm talking about prominent personalities. To me, that is a lot more. That's a lot more fun. I got to hear this again.
You're skeptical every day, and then you go to church, and you get on your knees, and you pray to an invisible man in the sky.
Invisible man in the sky.
You don't think that's a scam?
No, I don't.
I'll
tell you why.
A man that was built by a man?
I'll tell you why it's not a scam, in my opinion. All right?
Here it is.
Tide goes in, tide goes out. Never a miscommunication. You can't explain that. You can explain why the tide goes in.
Tide goes in, tide goes out.
I don't know. You know. See, we've said on this show...
Yeah, that one guy said he wanted to hear about everything, too.
What did you just say? What did
you say, man?
I said you should explain like that one guy wrote.
Oh, yeah, I'll explain. Well, you know, and Jace just reminded me, Glenn Beck said, why did we buy Alaska in the 1950s? That's a guy misspeaking more than not being bright enough. Why did we buy Alaska? I think what he was saying is, why did we make Alaska a state in the 1950s? I got it. I don't know. I could be wrong. I don't think he really believes we bought, or at that time believed that we bought Alaska in the 1950s. I think it was a misstatement. It's one of those things I would have to hear the entire thing in context. But, you know, the argument, and I will do that, Bud, you know, with you talking about that.
You're not talking about that one guy wrote a letter. He said, hey, would you please explain that, what he called a deism?
Yes, I'll explain. What do you mean, deism?
Yeah, he said you got a good you explained it and everything about it.
You talking about why we believe in God?
Yeah.
Who wrote in?
Some guy wrote a letter. Say what you do it.
An email? Okay. Well, here. I want to see that email, by the way. I want to respond to it, okay?
It was on Facebook.
Well, get out of here, will you, then? I'm telling people I respond to email to our website, and only email to our website. Now, we believe in God because it's in our genes. It's in our DNA. We believe in God because it's a belief that has been burned into the neural pathways of our brains for hundreds of thousands of years. We believe in God because even before we were human, even when we were less than human and on our way to becoming fully human, when we were, Homo erectus, or when we were what are you looking at?
What do you mean Homo erectus?
It's the name of a species of hominid that either we evolved from or was in tandem evolving with us. But the point is, we can't even remember when we didn't believe in a spirit world. That's how deeply ingrained in the human experience it is.
What was that thing you said about Neanderthal?
Neanderthals, this is a great example. Neanderthals are not humans. Neanderthals were also a hominid, less developed than human beings, that coexisted with us for a while on this earth. They were what we today recognize as the caveman, the classic caveman. You ever see pictures of cavemen?
Yeah.
Okay, that was a Neanderthal. I mean, humans might have looked that way one time, but Neanderthals were kind of hunched over. They were small. They did not know how to make spears. They basically hunted with shorter daggers. So, you know, their hunting technique was rougher. They didn't know about fishing. Humans knew how to fish. We even knew how to sew buttons onto clothes. Neanderthals didn't know these things. But one thing about Neanderthals, when they buried their... What are you looking all weird for, Robert?
What are you talking about? They knew about fish and we didn't.
Don't worry about it, okay? I'm just telling you. The Neanderthal buried its dead. And when they buried their dead, they buried them with artifacts. Now, this is a creature that was not a human, was less developed from a human, was, however, on its way to evolving to a higher level, and frankly, was not able to survive because it coexisted with humans, and we were better at hunting, and basically wiped out all of the food supply. So that the Neanderthal died out as the result of having to compete with humans for food source. But these were spiritual people. They believed in some kind of an afterlife because they buried their dead with artifacts. Okay.
Well, maybe they're the ones that believe in God, and we're not.
What do you mean? They're the ones that believe in God.
They believe in God, and then they died out. And now that's it.
No, man. They believed in a spirit world. So did we, because we had tattoo. Get out of here, will
you? Well, you said that they put artifacts.
Yeah, they put artifacts. So did we. I'm just telling you, it goes so far back that there were hominids on this earth. That is upright walking hominid beings like us who also had a sense of some afterlife. Now humans. Humans had a sense of a spiritual world for hundreds of thousands of years. The guy that they found in the Alps, you remember the frozen guy that you thought was so cool, bud?
Yeah, that guy was bitching, man. He found him laying there. They thought it was a dead guy.
It was a dead guy.
Yeah, it was a dead guy.
No, but they thought it was the guy just died or something.
Yeah, okay. The guy was like 3,000 years old, right?
Yeah.
They found that guy, and they got him to a laboratory.
Did they thaw him out?
Yeah, they had to thaw him out.
Yes, they thawed him out. You got to be careful, though, man, because you're going to destroy the specimen. But when they finally brought him back to the laboratory, they found tattoos. Now, this is a man that was 3,000 years old. He was some kind of a man trading between tribes on both sides of the Alps. He had a little leather satchel in which he carried what looked to be foodstuffs. He did have very rudimentary weapons. But he had tattoos. He had tattoos on the back of the knees.
Like right behind the leg?
Yes. And he was 5,300 years old. Holy God, that's 5,300 years old. That would put him at 5,100 years old. No, that would put him at 3,300 years old. 3,300 BC is what I'm saying. So in any event, this guy had tattoos in places that were not ornamental.
Well, what's that mean?
It means that those tattoos spoke to some other experience. Was it homeopathy? Were those tattoos there to help protect him from illness? Were those tattoos there to be seen or to influence some spirit world? Because they were not ornamental. They were not intended to be seen by other people. They were there strictly for the private use, these tattoos, of the individual. It also indicates some kind of a belief in something metaphysical. So for as long as we've been around, as long as we've been humans, we have believed in a spirit world. And for people to suddenly say, oh, well, God doesn't exist. Maybe, but it is certainly our experience, and it's more to the point, it's almost in our genes that we do believe in God. So you can't just say to me, oh, I just decided one day.
Well, what do you mean you can do that?
I don't think so. All right, a UFC fighter wants to fight the president. We'll talk about that. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
It's really quiet because we're not used to living in such a small town.
Except a natural-born citizen or a citizen of the United States.
Actually, Obama.
I appreciate that his intentions, and I don't doubt that he's well
intentioned. Taking paws off, you son of a bitch.
World famous Phil Henry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. News, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Truth is our bitch, and we go places other talk shows cannot go. A UFC fighter wants to kick the president's ass, so the tease says. Roger Ebert tweets the N-word. Plus, what company do you absolutely despise? Is it Best Buy? Is it Nokia? Maybe it's none of these companies. Maybe it's just a bunch of pains in the ass that wanted to put a list together of companies that they think Americans despise. Well, we'll find out. But that's what's coming up here at our news hour. And really, the first story that's of note, I think, is this guy, this Jacob Volkmann, who I'm sure there's all kinds of men, primarily, who get off on watching this guy go into the ring and beat the crap out of people. He is a UFC champion, Ultimate Fighting Championship fighter. I don't know, he's a lightweight. I don't know whether this guy has won championships, but he is a UFC lightweight. He's had 125 wins over Antonio McKee. Has he had 125 wins over the same guy, or is that UFC 125? Is that the name of his division? I guess we'll wait on the answer for that one. His words got him into a little bit of trouble on Tuesday, because what happened was the Secret Service visited him. He apparently had made some statements that Obama, he disagreed with Obama, and that he was going to go and fight the president. After defeating McKee, Volkmann was asked who he would like to fight next. He said first Clay Guida, who's another fighter in UFC. Then he said, actually, Obama, he's not too bright. Someone needs to knock some sense into that idiot. I just don't like what Barack is doing. Now, this is a guy who is, he claims to be a coach. And regardless of what you think of President Obama, it could be anybody. It could be President Bush. Regardless of what you think of these people, to say you want to, and you could call him an idiot, I guess. I've watched enough CNN listening to that jackass Pagalia calling Bush an idiot to know that I guess you can call presidents names. That's fine. It's not the classiest way to go about things, but hey. However, threatening to do violence to them, even if you think they're kidding or not, is against the law if you are serious. Now, if you're serious, here's what this guy said. And, of course, he didn't apologize because, well, he's the UFC lightweight heavy ass. So, you know, he don't apologize to nobody, I'm sure. And just so you know, UFC fighters are tough guys. They are tough dudes. They perform in almost a caged ring. And they use every kind of martial art. They use the roundhouse kicks and punches of karate and taekwondo. They use regular boxing stances and you know, punch as pugilists would. They do some Thai kickboxing. They do it all. And they use wrestling moves as well. So they are, this is why they call it Ultimate Fighting. They also are bare-fisted. They are barefoot. So this is some hard-ass entertainment. And there's a lot of guys that like to watch it. I think it's interesting sometimes. However, one thing they don't do, as far as I know, is they don't stop bullets. So they're mortal. And the Secret Service, knowing that, paid a visit to this guy and said, well, Mr. Volkmann? He said, yeah? They said, well, you said that you wanted to kick the president's ass. Now, the only side of this that we have is Volkmann's side. That's why, once again, we're relying on incomplete news. But the only side we have of this is Volkmann's side. And he was asked by the Secret Service, he says, did he threaten to kick the president's ass? And then he says that the Secret Service guy said he was embarrassed to be there. He said, this is Volkmann again making these claims, he actually apologized for coming. He wanted to make sure I wasn't going to go to D.C. to hurt the president. And I believe that. They probably said, we're sorry to bother you. I don't know if they said they're embarrassed to be there or not. Now, Volkmann goes on to say, the thing is, I got home and I checked my email. I had about 20 emails, and one of the ladies had actually contacted the FBI. So this woman had said that she heard Volkmann say he wanted to, you know, knock some sense into President Barack Obama. Now, there's a lot of people, and we'll play the audio for you, and then we'll get into why it is that these laws are made. and why it is that they're important. But there are a lot of people out there that are not aware of why you can't threaten the president. They think it's just some candy-ass law that infringes on their freedom of speech or something. Here is, in an interview with the MMAFFighting.com, UFC lightweight Jacob Volkman asked who he'd like to fight next.
I don't know. Actually, Obama.
Wow, you're calling out a Barack Obama right now. That's pretty big.
He's not too bright. He made a lot of like the Making Home Affordable plan and then his health care plan. Someone's got to knock some sense into that idiot.
Wow. Are you a Sarah Palin fan? Please say no.
No. Okay. No, I just don't like what Barack was doing. Because I'm a chiropractor, mm-hmm. so I know the healthcare situation is not good, but he's making it worse.
Yeah, you sound bright,
man. Most I've ever seen you fired up.
Yeah, it's irritating.
Yeah, unfortunately, he's also, you know, he's going to get a visit from the Secret Service. Wow, you're calling out Barack, huh? All right, so why does the Secret Service go to interview guys like that? It's because that within the lifespan of myself and others, we had a president murdered, John Kennedy. Before that, I think you could probably say anything you wanted about a president. I'm not sure. It would probably have gotten the interest of the Secret Service anyway, but it became a federal offense to kill the president after Kennedy was killed. Did you believe that before Kennedy was killed, it was not? It was handled as a local matter. John Kennedy's murder, William McKinley, Abraham Lincoln, these were all handled as local matters. Now, in the case of Lincoln, it was at a point in the development of police that the Washington, D.C. police needed help. So they called New York, and they brought down some New York detectives to help them investigate this. But there wasn't any FBI, and there was a military, and there was a very, very proficient, for its day, Bureau of Detectives in New York City, and that's who were called to help the Washington, D.C. police. I don't know about Garfield or McKinley, but by the time Kennedy was killed, it was still a local matter. The Dallas PD had it. And the Dallas PD, quite frankly, were it today, they would have butchered it beyond belief. I mean, what the Dallas PD did, and one of the reasons why we have Miranda is the way that suspects were treated. You have to understand something. They got this guy Oswald, and then after they got done talking to him, they dragged him in front of reporters. So they had Oswald standing there with three or four cops on either side and all these reporters going, "Hey, man, hey, what is that? Hey, you know. Here's our suspect. Here he is." Almost as if to say this is the guy who's guilty. Oswald was saying over and over and over again, "I need a lawyer. Can someone call me a lawyer? I need a lawyer. Can someone call me a lawyer? Is there a lawyer somewhere that will help me? I need a lawyer." He said it over and over and over again. Because this was pre-Miranda. Nobody said to him, "You have a right to an attorney." He knew he had the right to an attorney. And he also probably knew that he didn't have to answer questions. But nonetheless, the Dallas police prejudiced this thing from the gate. Then comes the shooting of Oswald in the garage. And the whole thing was such a cluster, you know what, that the murder of the president became a federal offense. So today, and God forbid it should happen ever again, the death of a president, the murder of a president, is strictly a federal matter. It's an FBI matter. That's that. Doesn't matter where it takes place. Number two, the threatening of bodily harm to a president became a violation of the law, because before Kennedy got into Dallas, there were all kinds of death threats and verbal and otherwise threats issued because he was really, really not liked by some people in this country, as you can well imagine. Kennedy was hated as much as Barack Obama is today by some people. And Obama, you know damn well, is hated by a lot of people. Kennedy, same thing. Okay, so these laws came about as the result of Kennedy's death. In the weeks and the months and the days that followed the assassination of Kennedy, the Warren Commission and so forth, all this stuff came up, you know.
Well, I mean, like, who's going to, you said the FBI looked at it?
Yeah.
It's the FBI. That's the FBI's purview. Anything that happens to the president, yes. The federal police. So it's no longer a local matter.
What do you mean you can't threaten or anything?
Well, you can't say, "I want to kick the president's ass." The Secret Service is going to go, "Well, okay, wait a second. Is he serious? Is he not? Let's go talk to him." The last thing the Secret Service wants is for a president to get harmed, because that's their job. Their job is to not have that happen. The last time it happened was in 1963, so that's 47 years ago. and they are 48 years ago now, and they don't want it to happen again. And contrary to the book written by that stupid ass, I don't know who that guy was that wrote that freaking book about how they, well, boy, the Secret Service has never been in a worse place. Let me tell you something, dumbass. The Secret Service has never been more on top of it, man. Never more on top of it. Because if you think those guys don't get it, and then this guy comes up with the line about how they're not motivated. Are you kidding me or something? What kind of Ronald Kessler? Boy, you talk about a book that came and went. I mean, came and went. Motivated? Are you out of your mind? They got a black president for the first time in history. You think there's maybe one or two guys in the Secret Service thinking that this guy could be a target? Gee. You've got, within the lifetime of many Americans, already an assassinated president. You think they're motivated by that? You think they figure it can't happen? Give me a break. You know, I thank God that I'm as smart as I am, you know.
Yeah, I was going to say, man, you figure everything out.
Yeah, so I wouldn't have to read that guy's book.
What did they say?
It's not even worth repeating. So that's why we have those laws, and that's why Jacob Volkman was visited by the Secret Service, and that's why, and you could hear him, he sounds like kind of a stupid ass, like, you know, he may be a chiropractor, but it sounds like he went to probably chiropractic school in Minnesota. I'm kidding. So we'll be back here on a world-famous Phil Henry Show. Roger Ebert says that he should have shut up talking about the Huck Finn thing. Why? 877-876-PHIL. We'll tell you why when we come back. Phil Henry Show.
It's the Phil Henry Show. This is the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
And welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Henry Show, 877-876-PHIL. We have Bud Dickman here, and we also have Robert Leonard on the line with us. Roger Ebert, you know who he is?
That's the guy, his face is like caved in.
No, not caved in. Don't have no, like, the lower part of his face caved in.
His face isn't caved in. He doesn't have a jaw.
Oh, man.
Yeah. It was surgery that was a resultant of cancer, and he decided that he just wouldn't have a lower jaw. The guy looks really weird. We talked about that. Some people think, oh, gee, Phil, that's really cruel of you. No, it isn't. If you can afford to have this kind of surgery, why not have that kind of surgery? Why are you forcing people to deal with your messed up kisser because you just want everybody to take you on your own I don't know. It bothers me, you know.
Well, if the guy's face caved in, you got to do something about it.
It's not caved in. Why do you guys keep saying that?
It looks like it.
Well, it may look like it, but in any event, Roger Ebert said, or he can't speak, tweeted or wrote some stupid crap. Now, a coming edition of Mark Twain's work, what work are we talking about? Huckleberry Finn and the Adventures of Tom Sawyer into a single volume will omit racially sensitive language like the N-word and the word engine which it will replace with the word slave. The news of the new edition set off a flurry of debate, and film critic Roger Ebert landed in some hot water from his fans. Ebert has backed away from his controversial use of the N-word on Twitter after jumping into a literary language debate on Wednesday. The film critic responded to the controversy about censored words in this new edition of The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn by tweeting Wednesday, "I'd rather be called an N-word than a slave." But following responses from Twitter followers, Ebert backed off on Thursday. "I'll never be called an N-word or a slave," he tweeted, "so I should have shut the F up." So he got in the N-word, he got in slave, he got in the F-word, and...
Yeah, for God's got a caved-in face.
And he's got a caved-in face. So he did a real good job. So thank you, Roger Ebert, for confusing the issue, you dumbass. The issue is a new book, a coming edition of Mark Twain's work, Huckleberry Finn and the Adventures of Tom Sawyer, that's going to eliminate these words because they're offensive. Now, where do you get off mucking around with somebody's work? Where do you get off taking a book that was written by someone and changing the words? It pisses off people. If you don't think the book is suitable for children, don't put it in the library. If you don't think the book is suitable for human beings, don't put them in. We can have that debate. But don't tell me you think the book is valuable. If we just change this and we just change that. I said this last night, and I'm going to say it again. This generation of Americans, it breaks all records for arrogance. I've never seen a group of human beings in America that thought more glowingly of themselves and had less reason to.
Well, yeah, but you say except the soldiers.
Yes, except the soldiers in Afghanistan and Iraq, who are the greatest Americans we have, and they happen to be over there. We could use them here. I've never seen anything like it. From the stupid parents that we have, to the leaders in our country, to the business people washing their hands of any responsibility for this economic disaster, to the people that kiss their rear ends and prop them up, to all the Obama bashers, all the Bush bashers, all of the Michael Moores, every stupid ass that you could possibly think of, we add now to the mix people who think they're going to take the works of Mark Twain, a guy who I can assure you, folks, because I've read about Mark Twain, I know his life pretty well, I believe I know the man, and I can assure you, were he here, he would, what are the words of Al Pacino in that movie? He'd take a flamethrower to the place. Mark Twain had no patience for stupid people. He had no patience for stupid people. He is known to have written a letter, as a matter of fact, to a sales pitch that he got in the mail. And the letter's very funny. I can't quote it. But he basically says to the guy, "Thank you very much, sir. You now break all records for the stupidity that I've encountered in my life. You are number one." Something along those lines. But here we have now educators in this country. And I don't know who to blame. Are they the parents? The parents who, some of these parents... You wonder whether or not English, you know, and I mean they're born in America, you wonder whether English is their first language anyway. So are the schools reacting to pressure from parents that don't have enough brains to know when to take the dog out? Are the parents allowing schools to do things that they should weigh in a little bit more on? I don't know the answer to that. All I know is that this is the height of art crime, if you want to call it something. This is the height of arrogant intellectual criminality to take a book by a renowned author, one of our own, Mark Twain. You know, we've got a few of them, Herman Melville, Walt Whitman, Longfellow. Is he American? I don't know.
I'll look it up.
Thanks. Hemingway, Kerouac, Ayn Rand. You know, we have the greats, and we deign to take their work and change it? Well, that's what's going on. Here is Alan Gribben. He tells the Today Show the intent of the book without the use of the N-word. Get that thing
especially
out of there.
For the younger reader, when the student is looking at five instances of this offensive word on the page.
God, listen to this ass.
Remember, Mark Twain didn't really mean this, and you have to understand the concept of irony. I think it spoils a lot of the reading experience.
I can't listen to this ass. Here he is again.
It won't be for everyone, but I am convinced.
Thank you. Here is WVUA-TV. You can't. They spoke to local teachers and a librarian.
History is history. You cannot rewrite history. There are things that have happened in history that are very bad, very unpleasant. We can't change it.
Consequences could be that the intent that writers such as Twain was trying to make will be lost.
All right, here is Mark Lamont Hill, who is a professor of urban studies at Columbia.
I appreciate that his intentions, and I don't doubt that he's well-intentioned. The problem is, while he's trying to expand readership for the book, when you take out the N-word, it's no longer the book. So much of this book is about the N-word. So much of this book is about how people are navigating race in this historical moment.
Yes.
Of course, the book's bigger than that. It's about loss. It's about estrangement. It's about death. It's about sorrow. But it's also about race. And to take that out is to deny students and teachers the opportunity to talk about something really important.
Absolutely. What he said there, very important. How did we navigate race at this particular time in history when Twain was writing? That's the context that we talk about. Not just the book. When you take a book off a shelf and you say, "Oh, this is an interesting book. Let me read this." You also need to understand the context of the times. All right, coming up, we have, that's all I have to say about that.
I don't understand about context.
You don't understand about context. Look it up, okay?
I look up N-word, too.
Yeah, you look up N-word. 877-876-PHIL. Coming up, what companies do you absolutely despise? Is it Nokia? Is it Bank of America? We'll tell you the most hated companies in America. If you can believe this, we have a list of these. When we come back on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry.
Listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
877-876-PHIL and our website, philhendryshow.com, if you want to go and check out what there is to check out. I mean, we have podcasts. We've got live streaming video, live streaming audio. We have our archives, thousands of hours of archives. We've just made another month downloadable. Just got that up on the website today. And so there isn't an inch, not a square inch, not a nanosecond of this radio show that has been performed that we do not have now available to you on our website. So, or we'll soon have available to you on our website. So check it out, philhendryshow.com. That's philhendryshow.com. I just realized I just said, check it out, you know?
Yeah, you go check it out, man. Like, yeah, you got to be more, I think, formal.
Yeah, you didn't say check it out. It makes you sound like you... playing a disc jock or something.
Are you guys serious?
Yeah, well, no, you don't want to be sloppy and everything.
Dora, come off like a sloppy.
What do you mean sloppy? I just went check it out. I don't know. It's just I reverted back to some radio announcer vibe or something.
Well, that's just it. You went. You puked.
Yeah, it didn't pukey.
What do you mean pukey? I didn't go check it out. I said check it out. So check it out, or I'm going to give you something to check out.
Yeah, that's sexual harassment.
Get out of here, will you? 10 most hated companies in America. Some of the companies on this list were once among the most beloved companies in America. However, or at least most respected. However, times have changed. Yes, they have. Now, let me give you an example of companies like Best Buy. They were once a beloved company. Johnson & Johnson. Who makes the baby oil? You got it. Johnson & Johnson.
I don't know about that. What do you mean baby oil?
Yeah.
They made Johnson & Johnson baby oil, man. You know, just trust me. Well, these companies have now made the list of the most hated companies in America. This is according to 24/7 Wall Street. Now, how did these companies that were mentioned in this dubious honor, how did they suddenly go from being beloved to hated? This list was compiled based on scores in six areas. According to 24/7 Wall Street, those doing the rankings examined the following things. They examined employee opinions based upon Glassdoor.com, and they helped out in the research, Glassdoor.com, employee opinions. They also took into consideration shareholder return. The total returns to stakeholders was compared to other companies. Consumer satisfaction, always important. Consulted were research reports ranging from J.D. Power & Associates. I just got a J.D. Power & Associates deal for my car.
Yeah, you're fill it out?
Yeah, I'm going to fill it out. Of course I'm going to fill it out. Companies rely on that. I'd be happy to fill it out, and I will give Jaguar a glowing report.
Well, man, why would you do that? What if you don't know if your car is going to blow up.
Would you want me to wait till it blows up before I send a report back to J.D. Power?
Yeah.
What do you mean, yeah?
Well, that's stupid.
All right. I'm going to fill it out based upon the experience that I've had thus far. My car could blow up.
Well, you don't know.
No, I don't know, man, but I'm not going to wait around for it to blow up before I... Oh, you know what, Jaguar? My car blew up, so can I have my J.D. Power & Associate report back? In any event, consumer satisfaction. Then we come to brand equity. Those who compiled the report checked to see if the value of the brand... as measured by data from companies such as Core Brand, Interbrand, and BrandZ had declined. What do we mean by brand? The value of the brand. Heinz 57. You know, you see that brand? Nike. You know that brand? All right. Media coverage. There was an analysis of media coverage conducted in-house by 27/4 Wall Street. Additionally, the Flame Index. Boy, that's a misfortune. If ever, that's not a very well-named
the main thing that people are being gay.
No, not being gay. But anyway, Flame Index, which analyzes, yes, how many homosexuals? No, Flame Index, which analyzes a cache of over 12,000 websites to determine the frequency of certain negative keywords. Okay, thank you for that, because that didn't make any sense. Perception of influencers. They included the way in which these firms were viewed by taxpayers, Congress, and the White House. Are you ready, ladies and gentlemen, for the 10 most hated companies in America? And we just gave you, and this is going to be a very interesting list. Number 10, the Dish Network.
Why?
The Dish Network, the 10th most hated company in America. Dish Network recently received unusually poor ratings from the MSN Zogby customer service poll. 31.2% of those familiar with Dish Network service called it poor. Consumers were particularly upset with what they view as surprise fees from Dish Network. Glassdoor research shows that the company has a terrible reputation among employees and that the company's CEO, Charlie Ergen, is held in particular low regard with a mere 22% approval among surveyed employees. Dish Network stock has significantly underperformed in the Dow Jones Industrial Average. Dish Network. And you know what's interesting about that? We moved into a house where we had no, there was no cable service, so we had to get satellite service at one point.
Yeah, you say, did you go to Dish?
You know what? We considered the Dish Network. And the only thing that kept me away from Dish Network is I wanted the NFL package, and DirecTV has that.
Yeah, that'd be my reason.
Well, that's why I got DirecTV. Dish Network has not, and in all that time, you would think, you know, you're not going to have a monopoly. People want an option, but look at that. DirecTV kicks their ass. Number 9, what's the 9th most hated company in America? Dell. Dell's electronics store performs worse than nearly every other online retailer. Its ratings and recent Consumer Reports research were abysmal. Its laptop reliability ranks last based on frequency of repairs needed and other serious problems. Dell also experienced much negative press about charges brought against it by the federal government, which covered accounting misstatements and other business violations. Recently, the New York Times reported that Dell sold defective PCs even though a number of its employees were aware of the problem. Dell's shares substantially underperform in the Dow Jones Industrial Average over the last year. Dell. And to be fair, though, I will tell you that we have Dell computers here, don't we?
Yeah, you better not say that. People hate it.
What do you mean people hate it? We have Dell computers, and I have to say the desktops that we have are good. However, you know, perception, baby, perception. All right, the number eight most hated company in America, maybe this doesn't come as a surprise at all, Bank of America. Bank of America has a legion of reasons to be included among the most hated companies in America. It received one of the lowest scores in a recent Zogby MSN customer satisfaction poll. It was rated as the worst bank to poor customer service. Wait a minute. Oh, here it is. It was rated the worst bank in the poll. Many consumers complained about high fees, though this was a common response to many other financial services firms. Bank of America also has received large amounts of negative press. There's a great deal of resentment among the public because of the bank's bailout. In addition, there is Bank of America's participation in mortgage robo-signing activity. Boy, I'll tell you, that has destroyed the reputation of more than one bank. That whole bullcrap mortgage, you know, modification program, give me a break. A practice that rubber-stamped home loan documents to allegedly short-circuit the foreclosure process. Bank of America recently settled with Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac with a $2.8 billion payment to cover bad mortgages sold to the agencies by one of the bank's operations. Bank of America's stock has significantly underperformed its rivals, certainly disappointing its investors. Number 8 most hated company in America, B of A.
You go to B of A, don't you?
Yes, I do. Bank of America is my bank. Bank of America is my bank, and I have my home mortgage through Bank of America. I've had 4 home mortgages through Bank of America.
Why do you do that?
And our business accounts are with Bank of America. I've been with B of A for a long time, and what I need from a bank, they cover very well, okay? Fortunately, we're not going through any kind of loan modification. We're not getting foreclosed on. I have not run into the problems that some people have, you know, knock wood. And if you don't have a problem, Bank of America is fine. But I will tell you this much. There have been times I walked in there and I've been upset about some things. It might have something to do with, oh, I don't know, a bounce check or something. And boy, they can really cop the attitude with you real fast. Not to mention the fact setting up certain merchant accounts. You know, it used to be, last year was really easy for us when we set up our merchant accounts for some of the things we're doing on the website, right?
Yeah.
This year, all of a sudden, there is no help. No help. We had to go to the, what the hell do you call it, man? To the basic merchant that we were using. Because B of A wouldn't give us any help at all. B of A was where the merchant account. Well, anyway, I don't want to go through a whole big thing.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I don't even know what I'm talking about. All right, so the number eight company is Bank of America. Number seven most hated company in America. Number seven, AT&T. Where do you have your cell service, huh? Don't tell me. AT&T has received a great deal of negative press for its poor 3G service. That is not Ma Bell's only problem, though. Independent research on customer satisfaction rates AT&T as poor. Consumer Reports recently reported that AT&T was the nation's worst cell phone service provider, receiving a poor rating in all service categories other than texting. No other service provider was given a single poor rating. AT&T also receives the lowest mark among cell phone companies in ChangeWave Research's survey of over 4,000 consumers. So AT&T, and that is a, you know, that's our wireless, a lot of people's wireless company. They suck. The sixth most hated company in America is Citigroup. Citigroup fell at the low end of a number of customer satisfaction surveys, even among banks, which generally perform poorly. It received particularly bad ratings from Zogby and the American Customer Satisfaction Index. The bank's reputation has been hurt by employee discrimination suits. Oh, yeah, that helps. Especially one which contends that the bank used the recession as an excuse to fire women.
Uh-oh.
Citi's image was also tarnished by the large amount of money that it received as part of the bailout, which was the most given to any other bank. Wow. Number five most hated company in America, Charter Communications. Charter Communications, aren't they a...
Yeah, they do a lot of like cable.
Cable company. I'm surprised that we haven't seen more cable companies. Charter Communications received the lowest score given to any ranked company in the 2010 American Customer Satisfaction Index, a 60 to a 100. I don't know what that means. That's the lowest ranked, the lowest score given to any ranked company in customer satisfaction. The company has long been plagued by customer complaints, often regarding improper billing practices and poor customer service. Charter has angered investors as well. The company filed for bankruptcy in late 2009, destroying the value of the stock. How can you not make money, even in the middle of a recession, how can you not make money with a communication company? What are people doing today more than anything else? They're using their bloody cell phones, they're watching their televisions, they're listening, and they're viewing their cable TV, they're listening to their radios. Can you believe, in the middle of a recession, of all the companies that we'd be doing poorly, communications, broadcast, all of these companies are on their ass. That means one thing and one thing only, the jackballs that run them haven't got a clue. Number four most hated company in America, Best Buy. Now, that's tough to believe.
Yeah, I love Best Buy. Go and get all the games there.
Well, Best Buy rates low on several surveys for both its bricks-and-mortar stores and its e-commerce site. Recent research by both the Consumerist and Consumer Reports gave Best Buy among their lowest rankings. According to Consumer Reports, in their December 2010 electronic store ratings, Best Buy ranked as the third worst bricks-and-mortar store, meaning the actual physical plant. And BestBuy.com was designated as the worst online store. Best Buy has disappointed Wall Street recently by missing earnings forecasts. This is number four. Its shares are down more than 10% during the last year, which is below the DJIA, that is the Dow Jones Industrial Average, and stocks in its peer group. So that is Best Buy. I tell you, let's take a break and we'll get to the top three, huh?
What are they?
I'm not going to tell you what they could grab the thing.
I don't want, don't tell me yet.
We'll give you the top three worst companies, most hated companies in America when we come back here. Which company is the most hated one in this country? Is it your favorite company? I don't know. What is it? Is it an airline? Is it a bricks and mortar store? Is it a bank? We'll find out. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
It's the Phil Hendry Show.
You're listening to the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
All right, we got the three most hated companies in America. Remember, we were listing the top 10 most hated companies in America, starting with number 10. And just to give you a recap, number 10, the Dish Network. You ready for that? The Dish Network, the 10th most hated. Hated! And when I say hated, we're talking about lousy customer satisfaction, public perception, stock performance, shareholder opinion, opinion of the CEOs. So this is employee opinion, stockholder opinion, the consumer experience, the price on the Dow Jones, all of these things and more figure into how companies are perceived. And the Dish Network is number 10. Number 9 is Dell, the maker of computers, et cetera, and electronics. Number 8, Bank of America. Number 7 is AT&T. Number 6 is Citigroup. Number 5, Charter Communications, which was just reviled by its customers. Just they hate Charter Communications. And we went up to number 4, Best Buy, which was a surprise to me. The number 3 most hated company in America, Toyota.
They ain't even American.
No, that's true. They're not. How'd that work out?
I don't know. How'd it be the most hated company? Well, they don't have to be an American company.
Yeah, they're the third most hated company in America is a Japanese company, Toyota. They were known for 30 years in the United States for a liability that surpassed any domestic competitor. The automaker's reputation was tarnished by defect-related accidents, lawsuits, and an $8.8 million vehicle recall, baby. Because of this bad press, Toyota's U.S. market share have dropped from 18% in 2009 to 15.5% in 2010. Boy, that's not much of a drop, is it? In the middle of a recession?
I don't think so.
In the J.D. Power 2010 Automotive Performance Execution and Layout Survey, Toyota received the worst possible marks in comfort, style, and overall performance and design. Wow. Wow. The third most hated company in America. The second most hated company in America, Nokia.
That's another Japanese company.
Right. So isn't this nice? Two Japanese companies. Who knows? Maybe we'll have a trifecta here, and it won't be all Americans that suck. Although it's the world's largest cell phone company, Nokia's reputation for the quality of its smartphones is in tatters. The company received the worst possible grades in J.D. Power's 2010 mobile phone and smartphone ratings for customer satisfaction, for physical design, ease of operation, and overall satisfaction. The only smartphone company with worse scores was Palm. Didn't you got a Palm Pilot?
Not so she'd notice.
Get out of here.
You got a rosy Palm Pilot.
Shut up, man.
Will you guys shut up and let me finish? Because I ain't got enough time here. All right, Palm, the only company with worse score, Rosy Palm Pilot. Anyway, according to the recent Brandwatch study, Nokia received the third greatest amount of bad press on Twitter. In BrandZ's annual rankings, the Nokia name has lost 58% of its value in the last year. Shares of Nokia dropped 20% in 2010. You can't half-ass it. Some of these guys think, oh, well, we're in the high-tech business, man. Everybody wants this, that, this, that. You running around half-assing it, man. And finally, ladies and gentlemen, here is the number one most suck-ass company in the history of the planet. Well, not in the history. This is the most hated. Here, I wish I had some music or something. The most hated company. Get out of here with the Mexican music. The most hated company in America, American Airlines. Yeah! Now, I have to tell you, American Airlines, call me crazy. I never had a bad experience with American Airlines. I've always enjoyed flying American Airlines. However, the American people, the American consumer has spoken. American Airlines made the list because of its dreadful customer service ratings and its poor on-time departure track record. These scores are surprising, given that American is one of only a few large U.S. airlines that has not been involved in a merger or alliance, transactions that often lead to, people not thinking the company is performing as well. Poor customer service. American stock has underperformed most of its peers during the last year. According to Glassdoor, only 36% of surveyed employees approve of CEO Gerard Arpey. They don't like his name, especially.
Yeah, I don't.
Take out the R.
Gerard Apey. Anyway, American Airlines received a score of 63 on the American Consumer Satisfaction Index, the ninth worst rating in 2010 out of 181 ranked companies. Wow. In the 2010 Travel and Leisure Survey of Best and Worst Airlines for Delays, American was the worst large national carrier. American Airlines, the most hated? Well, there you have it, folks. The most hated companies in America. See, we are getting to the point, aren't we? We aren't just blaming it all on the government. We recognize what's going on here. We recognize that there is a shift in attitude and an awareness among American consumers. Companies, the engines of industry, are failing us. So we need good people, man. And we need Americans taking math and science, man. We need math and science masters from America, and we ain't got them. So, Bud, work on that.
All right.
Our producer is Jason Rantz. Our technical director is Charles Wygon. Our associate producer, Dan Northcraft. PhilHenryShow.com, baby. And we will keep plugging away and plugging away and plugging away until we achieve world dominance. See you tomorrow night.
Phil Hendry.